Welcome to CHOATS Enforcement and Investigations Updates, a podcast series hosted by our Government Enforcement and Compliance Group. On this show, we discuss timely analysis of legal and compliance developments, court decisions, and changes in legislation and regulations related to white-collar defense, global investigations, and whistleblower claims.
Hello, I'm Adam Bookbinder, co-chair of the Government Enforcement Group at Choate Hall & Stewart. And I'm here with my colleague, Christine Savage, the other co-chair of our Government Enforcement Group. Over the past decade, cybersecurity concerns have become increasingly top of mind for companies and for institutions. They have concerns about cyber attacks disrupting operations, damaging their reputation, requiring huge response costs, and about increasing government regulations in this area. But now there's a new area of concern. Christine, you want to give some of the highlights about that?
Sure. So mainly the new concern is False Claims Act liability for both federal contractors and grant recipients. And that includes colleges, universities, other research institutions like academic medical centers, who are frequently being asked to certify that they've implemented various cybersecurity measures and policies. By virtue of their receipt of federal funds, they're susceptible to False Claims Act claims, and even worse, whistleblower claims. And we're now starting to see what's likely just the leading edge of False Claims Act cases in this space starting to come down the pike. And these cases are notable, like any False Claims Act case. There's tens or even hundreds of millions of dollars potentially at stake, given the Act's treble damages and statutory penalty provisions. There's the specter of having to operate for years under an institution-wide corporate integrity agreement. And that's true even if the area of noncompliance was contained to a specific contract or department. And then there's the potential for exclusion from federal programs or the ability to continue to get federal contracts or grants.
Christine, why is it that we're just starting to see these False Claims Act cases now?
Yeah, there are a few reasons, and a key one really dates back to October of 2021 when Lisa Monaco, the Deputy Attorney General at the Department of Justice, announced what DOJ has called their Civil Cyber Fraud Initiative, and they issued a press release on the subject. And in the release, Monaco highlighted three particular areas of focus that DOJ would take when looking at federal contractors and grant recipients. And those areas include knowing provision of defective cybersecurity products or services, knowing misrepresentation of one's own cybersecurity practices, and the knowing failure to monitor for or disclose cybersecurity incidents or breaches. So we're now, you know, nearly 3 years into that memo being out there. And the memo really made clear that the government would be using the Civil False Claims Act as the primary means of pursuing these issues. And these cases tend to take a little while to percolate, and I think we're now getting there. So, Adam, do you want to talk a little bit about two of the recent cases we've seen in this space?
Yeah, I'm happy to do that. So the first of these cases, and probably the most significant, is against Georgia Tech University. It was filed originally in 2022, but it was just unsealed this year. And this is a False Claims Act case that was originally filed by two relators or whistleblowers, but the United States has intervened in this case. So it's now being led by DOJ. The two relators, one of them was and actually is the current Associate Director of Cybersecurity at Georgia Tech. The second one was a security engineer at the university. And just by way of background, so that you understand what the subject matter is here, Defense Department regs, or DFARS as they're often called, require contractors to provide adequate cybersecurity for any DOD information the contractor possesses. And when they say adequate cybersecurity, what they're talking about is at least meeting the standards set out in the National Institute of Standards and Technology, or NIST, publication 800-171. The contractors have to do a self-certification, and they have to report their score on that certification to DOD before any contract is awarded or renewed. For any requirements in those standards that they don't meet, The contractor or grant recipient needs to submit a plan to achieve compliance. So that's the background. The allegations in here are essentially that the internal evaluators at Georgia Tech were under pressure to find that the university complied with these NIST standards. So to do that, the evaluators applied the standards inconsistently to different Georgia Tech departments. They took administrators' word for the fact that systems complied with standards rather than assessing that themselves. The evaluators allegedly were, in some cases, tasked with making systems compliant in addition to evaluating them, creating a conflict of interest. And the complaint alleges that given all of these problems, Georgia Tech's certifications to DOD were not accurate. The relators claimed that they reported these concerns internally, but nothing changed. And they flagged, they claimed they flagged non-compliant labs that shouldn't be billing DOD for research, but that the administrators overruled them, the research continued, and the billing to the government continued. So those are the allegations, quite serious, actually, in the Georgia Tech complaint. The second case that's worth flagging is against Penn State University. And there, the allegations are that, well, the relator is a former chief information officer of Penn State, and again is alleging that the university filed false certifications or submitted false certifications of compliance with the NIST standard. What this relator claims is that Penn State didn't really understand these NIST standards and didn't follow his suggestions for complying with them. He alleges that Penn State, among other things, used Microsoft cloud data storage that was not certified for the kind of controlled unclassified information that Penn State stored in those cloud locations. And that Penn State asked the relator, the whistleblower, to lead two of what it called tiger teams to assess its compliance with these security standards. When those teams discovered a lack of compliance, in particular, what the relator claims were false attestations starting as early as 2018, the university didn't do anything about it. The allegations in the complaint are that Penn State doesn't know what kind of controlled unclassified information it has or where that's stored, and that the relator told administrators this, and that the university shouldn't be billing the Defense Department for its work. But the work continued and the billing continued nonetheless. So these allegations are also serious, somewhat less fleshed out and less thoroughly documented in this Penn State complaint than in the Georgia Tech case. And maybe for that reason, DOJ has not yet decided whether it wants to intervene in this case. It's unsealed. The complaint was unsealed recently, but the case has stayed and the government's investigation is continuing. They're trying to assess whether they want to intervene. And a recent status report makes it clear that the parties are negotiating and they may actually enter into a settlement at some point. So, Christine, both of these cases that I just mentioned involve DOD contracts and what's called controlled unclassified information. But do you want to talk about how rules for that kind of information compare to those for basic scientific research that a lot more universities may deal with?
Sure. As you can imagine, requirements in the DOD space, particularly as it relates to controlled unclassified information, are more fully baked than those that apply to more run-of-the-mill research institutions that are, you know, doing fundamental or basic research. But those requirements are coming. So the Office of Science and Technology Policy, or OSTP, they've issued guidance now on July 9th of this year that indicates that some form of NIST standards will be developed specifically for research institutions. This applies to sort of non-CUI material. And those types of programs are going to be required for any institution that averages $50 million or more in R&D funding per year. And sort of the adoption of those standards will be part of their requirement to stand up a full research security program. For those that are you know, in the DoD space or who are looking to get into that space. Not only do you need to worry about sort of the NIST standards and DFARS, but there's also the potential need for what's called CMMC compliance, which is Cybersecurity Maturity Model Certification. And that sets forth additional standards for certain DoD partners who handle sensitive unclassified information. That certification has multiple tiers depending on the type of information that's being generated or used, and it's going to become a contracting requirement once those certification standards are fully implemented. Adam, do you want to talk about a few takeaways for institutions and companies that receive federal dollars based on what we've talked about?
Yeah, I'll start with three. First, if it wasn't already obvious, these cases and the False Claims Act risk make it clear that cybersecurity needs to be a top priority. On par, I'd suggest, with things like compliance with HIPAA for healthcare organizations. Second, it is true that notwithstanding that, all institutions, all companies have some cybersecurity weaknesses, but they need to identify the material ones and have plans to remediate them. And third, institutions and companies simply have to be honest when doing the kind of assessments that these regulations require. As you know, as people always say, it's always the cover-up that gets people in trouble. You simply don't want to make the mistake of not being honest with what your cybersecurity situation actually is. Christine, you have a couple more to add to that?
Yeah, I'll throw a few onto the pile. First, if you've got significant federal contracts or grants, make sure that your CIO and your IS teams are part of your awards team. They need to know what the cybersecurity requirements of your awards are. And ideally, at the time you're applying for an award, so you've got the lead time you need to ensure that you're compliant by the time the funding becomes available. You know, in one of the cases that you mentioned, it sounds like they didn't even know what the requirements were that they needed to be following. And so having that in mind would be useful. Second, once the IS team understands what the requirements are, someone needs to actually translate them for the researchers so that they understand what they actually need to do and not do, how to make sure that they're doing it correctly. Lastly, you know, you can't get confirmation on compliance on day one and then just assume that everyone's going to remember what you told them and be compliant sort of throughout the course of an award. Someone's actually got to be monitoring for cybersecurity compliance. And that means training, auditing, remediating issues as they arise. And that's got potentially significant implications for organizations regarding how they segment and secure their data. I think if you went back a decade, people kept a lot of information on departmental shared drives, thumb drives, personal laptops. Many of those practices should already have come to a close, but now the failure to adopt good cyber hygiene can carry larger consequences. So I guess for now, we'll say good luck to everyone. The risk is already out there. Clearer rules are yet to come, and more cases like the ones that Adam mentioned are probably on their way as well.
With that, thank you for joining us.
The information presented in this recording is for educational purposes only. It does not constitute legal advice for a specific situation. If you wish to obtain legal advice, you should retain an attorney and explain the facts of your particular situation.